So really, this is a twofold question that was asked. Question number one, how do we decide what halacha should be? Question number two, why don't we go like the Rambam? Maybe when we answer question number one, we'll no longer have a need for question number two. So the question really begins with, how do we know what the halacha is, right? So really, this deserves a series, which we used to have here at Machon Meir, and you guys could catch it online at torahforme.org. But for now, we'll really make a quick overview of halacha. Technically, the Torah was given to Moshe. Can I talk quickly? And if I'm talking too fast, you guys will slow me down?
Yes.
If I talk quickly, we'll cover more ground. Okay. Torah was given to Moshe. Since Moshe's time, God said, in the end of the Torah, I've given you all of the Torah, there's no more Torah up here. No more Torah coming down from heaven. From here on in, you guys have to figure it out. How do you figure it out? So we have laws of derivation. Laws of derivation were given to Moshe, halacha Moshe Misina. Laws of derivation are used to derive new halachot. When Moshe went up to Sinai, the Midrash says God showed him the Torah and then showed him how to use the laws of derivation. God then told him, you educate rabbis, educate teachers. Whoever wants to learn, the Torah must be made available to all. Whoever wants to has to learn and purify themselves and be as honest as possible. When a person has good traits and he is learned and he learns and learns and perfects his knowledge of the 13 attributes, at the end of the day, I have instilled within them the human factor. And so, God showed him that different people will have different understandings which are completely logical. God took a law and said to him, now Moshe, here are 49 proofs, logical proofs, that in this new instance, the halacha should be mutar, permissible. And here are 49 logical proofs from the Torah to say that it is asur. So Moshe said, well, how do I figure it out? If logic could prove both ways, how do I reach a bottom line? God said, you put together a court that is educated and purified and very, 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 very dedicated to the truth and impartial. And that court will use the laws of derivation. And then the human factor comes into play, where one judge will hear out the other judge and say, yeah, but I think this derivation is more logical. The other judge will hear out him and then say, well, I think this is more logical. At the end of the day, you'll go by the majority opinion. For generations, till the period of the end of the first temple, the period maybe the end of the second temple, we were still capable of deriving things from the Torah, using the laws of derivation. We had a high court. The high court could come to a conclusion. There was no reason to have machloket. Everything could be decided by a high court. There was almost no machloket. Till the generation of Hillel and Shammai, there was one machloket. The generation Hillel and Shammai had three machlokot. Their disciples lived in a time that the Romans started persecuting us. When we had multitudes of students of Hillel and Shammai who could not learn the way they should have, says the Tosefta in Sanhedrin, when you had multitude of students who could not learn the way they should have, they were being persecuted by the Romans, they couldn't spend the necessary decades learning and studying and perfecting their tradition. Rabbah machloket b'Yisrael. That is when we start finding tremendous machlokes. You have Mishnayos filled with machlokes. Where did it all come from? It came from the fact that the generation could not study the way their predecessors had. They would only study for 15 years, 20 years in the yeshiva. They didn't spend 50 years studying. They didn't spend the decades. They didn't have the academies, the great centers of Torah study that their predecessors had. They were being persecuted. That's the story of Hanukkah. Why do we give Hanukkah gelt to the Rebbe on Hanukkah? Because we rejoice the fact that now again we can learn Torah publicly. We could send our children to a cheder. We could have public Torah centers. So we rejoice that, and we give the Rebbe something as a sign of our rejoicing, the fact that our child can learn publicly with the Rebbe again. So, in the generation of Hillel and Shammai's disciple, the Tosefta says, that is when we started having much machlokes, menastat Torah k'shtei Torot. The Torah suddenly became like two Torahs. You have Shammai Academy, Hillel Academy, two different ways of thought. What's going on here? Shammai and Hillel agreed on everything but 3 points. How come their students have so many machlokot? Because their students couldn't learn the way their predecessors had. And Rebbe came along and Rebbe saw that this was what was happening. Rebbe was a unique generation. He was buddy-buddy with Caesar Antoninus. They were childhood friends and they were friends. And Antoninus ultimately became a Ger Tzedek. And Antoninus supported Rebbe, and Rebbe saw this was a golden opportunity. He recognized what the future held for the Jewish people. He recognized that it was only a matter of time and the rabbis would not be able to convene and learn as they had. So he didn't take this for granted, the fact that his generation had peace. Rather, he took advantage of it. He set up huge academies. He set up kolels. He would fund the rabbis. He would give them food. And he brought in as many rabbis as he could. Together, they compiled the Mishnah. They took the oral law, and they wrote the best version which they had. They had 13 versions of the oral law. The best version was Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir knew how to say things in a concise way, and so they took his Mishnah. That's why we say Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. They took Rabbi Meir's version of the Mishnah, and then they added to it, and the courts decided which opinion would be Stam, which opinion would be stated plainly in the Mishnah, and which would be quoted as a Machlokes, which would be quoted as Chachamim Omrim, which opinions they accepted. Now this was the second time that such an attempt was made. The first time that the Mishnahs were compiled were by Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel left out a tremendous number of Tanaic quotes. Those became Braisa, those that were left out. The Tanaic quotes that were included in Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's version of Shas that Revi left out, those were compiled into the Tosefta, the additions. That's Braisa is those that were left out by Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which is a tremendous amount of Braisa, external quotes. And Tosefta are those that were included in the Mishnah when they compiled the Mishnah, but when Rebbe compiled it, he was more succinct. He said these could be left out, you could figure them out from the Mishnahs that I left inside. Those he compiled in the order of the Mishnah, around the Mishnah, in the back of every Masechet, you could find the Tosefta, and those are called the Tosefta, the additions. They're not really necessary, they're more details which you could really figure out from the Mishnah. Most of the oral law remained by heart. Remember, when Moshe got the Torah, he got Torah, Nevim, Psuvim, Mishnah, Gemara. We have Mishnahs that date back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ezel Mekomon, the fourth chapter of Zvachim, that we say every morning, is a chapter that we have verbatim from the days of Moshe. That's why the chapter of Ezel Mekomon discusses the temple as having curtains. The temple didn't have curtains. The Mishkan had, the tabernacle had curtains. That's because that chapter still dates back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Mishnahs are from the time of Moshe. The oral law was given over in the form of Mishnah and Gemara from the time of Moshe. What happened in Rebbe's time was that they had to take it down and summarize what were the machlokot. The majority of the oral law remained by being given over orally, remained something that was in the hearts. On your hearts. The oral law is supposed to remain in our hearts and not written down. It was an exception what Rebbe did because he had no choice. Along came Ravina and Ravashi. A few centuries later, they saw that the Gemara was being forgotten, and so they did something unusual. They wrote down a version of Talmud. Really, everyone had a tradition of Talmud. The Gemara was dating back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Talmud is the logic behind the laws, and then some. We can't go into everything defining Talmud. For now, we'll just say it's the logic behind the Mishnah, even though there's much more to it than that. They wrote down a version of Talmud. In that version of Talmud, they did a few things. They gave us the logic behind the mitzvot. They gave us the hava minot, the thoughts that are not accepted halachically as to the understandings of the laws. They gave us braises that we don't have other than in the Gemara, in which they summarize other opinions that were acceptable in the time of the Mishnah. Now, how do we define, bottom line, what is the halacha from the Gemara? That is a code that the Gemara teaches us in many different places, in Ksubas and Yevamos and Erevin. We have different places in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara gives us different formulas for deriving what is the halacha after you learn Gemara. You learn Gemara, the Gemara does not always reach a bottom line. 80% of the Talmud is without a bottom line. So how do you decide what's the bottom line? So we have rules. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rav and Shmuel, halacha k'Rav b'Yisurei, halacha k'Shmuel b'Mamonos. We have laws, we have rules. We have rules that the Talmud gives us, and you have to know how to apply them. And sometimes the rules contradict. One of the rules that we have is the Gemara might bring an argument in one tractate, and in another tractate the Gemara sides with one of those opinions. That's called stama de Talmuda, that the Talmud went plainly with one opinion. That is an indication that the Talmud accepts that opinion as being correct. So we have rules, and sometimes the rules contradict, and sometimes it's unclear how to apply those rules. Do we say Rebbe Meir Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, or Matin k'Rabbi Yehuda? Do we say that when you have an argument between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is always going to be like Rabbi Yehuda, or the halacha is leaning towards Rabbi Yehuda, but you need a final accounting which way it's going to go? What happens when you have a stam mishnah like Rabbi Meir, and you have Rabbi Yehuda's opinion against him? Do you say Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, or do you say the halacha is like the stam mishnah, the plainly stated mishnah? This is where Rishonim had different traditions, and this is where the Rishonim, the Gaonim, and the Rishonim sat down and worked and figured out how you rule in halacha. The first such work that we have is Rabbi Yehudai Gon wrote Baal Halachos Gedolos. Baal Halachos Gedolos is very early. Sometimes his works got confused and printed in the Talmud even. You have lines in the Talmud where the Tosa says, that's not Talmud, that's Rabbi Yehudai Gon, that's Baal Halachos Gedolos. You have all sections of the Talmud that they say, wait a second, the printers got confused, that's not even Gemara. So Rabbi Yehudai Gon was the first one, and then after him came the Rif. Obviously we're skipping some rabbis along the way. They wrote two great works in which they summarized the halacha from the Talmud. What the Rambam did was the Rambam took the Gemara and did something unique. He said, I'm going to summarize all of halacha for all of the Jewish people, giving you the bottom line in a unique and clear order. Rav Yudaigon, Baal Halachas Gedolos, and the Rif, and everyone before the Rambam, and most of the people after the Rambam, what they did was, they take a tractate, and then they summarize, bottom line, what does this tractate teach me? Now you want to figure out a halacha in gear. Okay, where are you going to look it up? In Yefamas? In Ksubas? In Nazir? Where is it? Go find it. You have to really master those works in order to find it. What the Rambam did was he wrote Yad HaChazaka. Yad is Gematria 14. He said, I'm going to make something very simple and very clear. And here's the rule. When you learn Rambam, whenever you learn Rambam, always begin with the beginning. If you have a quote that's in chapter 3 of a book, open up to chapter 1. Because the Rambam is the only work, to his time that I know of, that wrote things in such a concise and clear manner. So that when you want to know a halacha, you want to know the background you need for that halacha, just open chapter 1. The Rambam writes in an ordered fashion. The Mishnais aren't ordered. If you begin tractate Shabbos, you want to know what are the 49 prohibited actions. You've got to wait till you hit chapter 7, Mishnah 2. You're not going to know that off the bat. You open up a Rambam, right away in chapter 1, halacha 1, he tells you, these are the biblical commandments about Shabbos. These are the applications. These are the rules you need to know whenever you read my work about the laws of Shabbos. The Rambam is very clear. The Rambam wrote an amazing work. Rambam was a giant. On the Rambam's tombstone is written, from Moshe to Moshe, no one arose like Moshe. Rambam was a giant. Now, the Rambam, at the end of the day, was a Rishon. He was one of many great people. We have the Rambam, we have the Rith, we have the Rosh, we have all the Tosafists. We have many giants in that realm, in that area of, you're talking about the 1000s to the 1400s. Those 400 years, that half a millennium, that was, you had many, many, many great giants. Now, the Rambam's work was exceptional. The Rambam wrote something in his introduction. The Rambam said, I'm calling my work Mishneh Torah, second to Torah, because my intent is that you can learn the Tanakh and learn my work, and then you will know halacha. You'll know everything you need to know. Along came the people of his generations, read it, and said, what's wrong with this guy? Who does he think he is? He's going to write a work that's, all you need is Tanakh and his work? So the Rambam writes in a letter to his disciple, Rabbi Pinchas Adayan, and he says, I don't understand. Are people completely foolish? People really think I meant that literally? People think I meant you stop learning Talmud? I'm so smart. You should stop learning Talmud. Just learn Tanakh and my work. I know that's what I wrote. I wrote that you have the common folk. They work and they don't have time to learn. And the average person who can't learn and derive halacha the way he should. So I wrote a work which is easy for the common folk. The average person, if he wants to get to halacha, how's he ever going to get to halacha? He can't. He's not going to have the time to learn all the background. So I wrote in my introduction that I expect that a person will be able to learn Tanakh and my work, and then he'll have an overview of what he needs to know of halacha. But how could anyone think that I meant that that's what a person should do? Of course you have to learn the Talmud. And he said, and I'll tell you, he says, if you come to my academy, in my academy, I consistently teach the Rif. I constantly learn Gemara with them, and I learn Rif with them, and I keep teaching them what Rav Yitzchak Fez, the Rif, what he says, because he did a great work, and I hardly ever disagree with him. I don't think there are 10 times in all my work that I disagree with him. So I teach them that, because in my academy, I keep teaching them Talmud. I don't tell them just learn my work. Of course not. So that's what the Rambam writes. Now, we skipped a very important point, which we'll get back to in a few minutes. Being that the question was asked, why don't we just learn Rambam? So answer number one is, the Rambam didn't want us to just learn Rambam. Look at what the Rambam himself writes. And if that's not enough, you open up the Rambam, Hilchos Talmud Torah, the laws of learning Torah, look what the Rambam writes. He doesn't say, want to know how to learn Torah? Learn Tanakh, learn my work, that's how you learn Torah. No, that's not what it says. It says, learn Tanakh, learn Mishnah, learn Gemara, and the laws. When he tells you what he actually expects you to do, he tells you. And answer number three. You've already had two very strong answers, David, right? Those two each could stand on their own. But let's get to answer number three, which is even more important than those two. Because those two revolved around the Rambam. Answer number three, which is really the real answer together with answer number four, is that let's read Rambam. The Rambam writes, why do we accept the Talmud? Good question. Might sound heretical, but the Rambam says, why is it that what the Talmud says goes? What gave them that strength? Says the Rambam, the fact that the Jewish people as a whole accepted the Talmud. That fact gives the Talmud the strength of the High Court of Israel. There's no court that says you must listen to the Talmud. Where does it say it? Who gave the rabbis, Ravina and Ravashi, and their academies the right to compose an oral law that will define the halacha for all future generations? Answers the Rambam, the Jewish people did. The Jewish people define halacha. Halacha is defined based upon the way we go. If the whole of the Jewish people, every rabbi and every Jew has accepted that this is halacha, and no one's questioned that, then that's halacha. That's it. And anyone who comes and tries to change that is going against the Torah. Even if he says, yeah, but I have a tradition going back before Ravina and Ravashi. I have a different Talmud. We tell him that has nothing to do with Judaism. Judaism isn't about whatever you want goes. Just so you think is right? No. There's a tradition and we go with the tradition. Now the Rambam never got that status. The Rambam is a giant. The Jewish people never accepted the Rambam like they accepted the Talmud. Never. Never in all history. Never. In his own lifetime people argued on him and later they argued on him. Some Jews have his tradition and some don't. You have specific, small Yemenite communities that have the tradition that they go with the Rambam. That's like a community has a rabbi that they go with. Okay, it's questionable whether it's legitimate for them to continue with it or not. They're the minority, a very small minority. But okay, that's their question. That's not our question. When someone asks me, why don't we all go like the Rambam? I'm sorry, but that's turning the question on its head. Why should we all go like the Rambam? We have a tradition. Our tradition, we'll discuss how halacha is defined for us. That's a different question. But the question doesn't begin. Because the halacha does not begin with one individual, and I don't care how great he is. You see that the Rambam was willing to ask a heretical question, why do we even accept the Talmud? And the Rambam doesn't say, because they were such giants, they were brilliant, it was Ravina, Ravashi. No, it's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, halacha is defined by the Jewish people. Now, I'm playing within your framework, David. There are many answers out of the framework, but I wanted to answer your question within the Rambam. Meaning, I could quote to you Chazon Ish, and I could quote to you a lot of other sources for these concepts. I'm purposely quoting you Rambam because your question begins with Rambam, so I'm not sure who I could answer. So I'm working within the framework you're giving me. Once we've understood, and I assume we've reached the common ground that we understand that there's no legitimate reason to go solely with the Rambam, now we could start talking about other sources. But I first wanted to answer you from within your framework. Now, the truth is that the question doesn't begin for another reason. You open up a Rambam and you begin the very beginning of the Rambam and you start reading. And very quickly you reach a chapter that starts talking about the stars. You read it and it doesn't make sense. So you read the next line and that doesn't make sense. You read the next line, so that doesn't make sense. So you finish one chapter and you say, I didn't understand any of that. Let me go on to the next chapter. You read the next chapter and you say, I didn't understand any of that. So then you can continue reading, or you could close the book and say, gee, I don't get what's going on here. If you continue reading to the end of the next chapter, the Rambam tells you, by the way, you weren't supposed to understand anything I just told you. All of that is the deepest secrets of Kabbalah, the deepest secrets of Maaseh Merkava and Maaseh Bereishis, and you can't understand it. So you ask yourself, gee, why couldn't you tell me that in the beginning? Why'd I have to run through the first three chapters reading and reading and not understanding? So maybe the Rambam didn't entertain a thought that a person would be foolish enough to just start reading Rambam. Maybe the Rambam assumed that you'd learn the way all of Judaism has been learning for all generations, that a student got from his Rebbe, and there's a tradition. You know, people who just opened Tanakh, or just opened Rambam, or just opened Shulchan Aruch, or just opened Gemaras, and did not learn with a tradition, they've reached the most far out conclusions, as far off as you can go. A person can't just open and start reading. You have to learn from a Rebbe. You have to have a tradition. This is the oral law. Part of the idea is it's given over from Rebbe to Talmud. You just open up and read. Where are you going to get to? There's a reason why it was given Moshe, Kibbutz Torah Misinai. Moshe didn't invent it. He got it from God. He gave it over to Yeshua. Yeshua gave it over to his disciples. People want to grow. They have to learn from a Rebbe. That's part of the reason why certain rabbis were against Art Scroll, including Rabbi Feinstein, who wrote them a letter of approbation. But there was a reservation behind that approbation. Because he said, there's a mistake. People are going to open up an art school and think they could learn Talmud. There's no way you could learn oral law without a tradition. You could get a basic, very, very inaccurate picture. But people don't realize how inaccurate the picture is. Anyone that has a tradition knows that that's not how halacha goes. Halacha does not go by a specific rabbi, no matter how great he is. You might have your rabbi, and you might decide, I go with him. Okay, fine, that's the way it should be. Everyone should have his rabbi. And he goes in accordance with his rabbi. But to ask, why don't all of the Jewish people go by one rabbi? That's completely wrong. And I'll tell you even more so. When the Shulchan Aruch came out, Rav Yosef Karo composed the Shulchan Aruch. So he had a chavrusa. Rav Yosef Karo, right? He also learned with a chavrusa. His chavrusa was none other than the brother of the Maharal Miprag. The Maharal's brother of Chaim was the chavrusa of the Rama. I'm sorry, not the Shulchan Aruch, of Moshe Isserles. His chavrusa, not the Beis Yosef's chavrusa, the Rama's chavrusa was of Moshe Isserles. Now, technically, the Rama of Moshe Isserles wrote an identical Shulchan Aruch, but when he came to publish, they showed him the Shulchan Aruch. He said, Rav Yosef Karo wrote a great work, no reason to compete. Bury mine, keep printing his, I'm not publishing. But when he wrote his Shulchan Aruch, so his chavrusa, Rav Chaim, wrote a whole work explaining why Rav Moshe Isserles is wrong and he has no right to publish a Shulchan Aruch. One of the things he writes is, you know very well that when we were studying together under Rav Shalom Shachna, we asked him to write a Shulchan Aruch. And he, with his great piety, refused. He said, no one rabbi can define halacha for the Jewish people. Halacha is defined by having a specific rabbi in each generation sit and analyze the sources of the halacha and come to a conclusion. You can't just open up a book and say, ah, that's not halacha. We begged him to write the work you just wrote. And he refused. He said, I cannot make a change in the Jewish tradition. The tradition is that the halacha goes based upon the rabbi of that generation sitting and analyzing how the halacha should be. I'm not going to write a work that's going to bind all other rabbis. We see very obviously from the discourse between the Rama and Rav Chaim, no one entertained the thought. No one. And I'm talking about 200 years after the Rambam. That the Rambam is going to be the work that defines halacha for Am Yisrael. That being said, over 60% of the Shulchan Aruch is in line with the Rambam. It happens to be that the Rambam was one of the greatest giants of Jewish history, and it is true that the Rambam's work, a large percentage of it, is the way we do today, that is accepted in halacha. But whether it is or is not accepted is not a question of the Rambam's greatness, as much as a question of what did Am Yisrael accept. The halacha is defined by the tradition that the rabbis of the generation and the people of the generation accept. And I think the point is understood. We'll conclude with two interesting points. Point number one, when they asked Rabbi Feinstein if he'd be interested in looking in the manuscripts they found of the Rambam, and they're putting out these most accurate versions of the Rambam, he said it makes no difference. So they asked him, but these are accurate. This is what the Rambam really said. So he said, so? So they said, but the Rambam. So he said, you're misunderstanding the weight the Rambam has in halacha. The Rambam's weight in halacha does not stem from his greatness. It stems from the fact that the Jewish people accepted him in halacha. And the Rambam that they accepted in halacha is the Rambam that we've had for the last four centuries. It's not the manuscripts you're finding now. Even if you'll prove to me that the Rambam wrote X, Y, or Z differently than we have it now, that doesn't affect halacha. Because Am Yisrael never used that. The strength of the Rambam is what Am Yisrael accepted, not the Rambam's greatness. So there's no point in spending time looking at what the old manuscript said. It's interesting to know that the Rambam held that. Fine, there are many interesting historical facts, but in halacha what counts is what Am Yisrael had for generations. And the same is written by the Chazon Ish, and the same is written by others. So that's point number one. Point number two, guys, we'll get to questions in a second. approximately a decade ago, no more, it's already a decade and a half, 15 years ago approximately, some guys from YU went hunting for what is the Tcheles. So they came up with a certain conclusion that this is how you make Tcheles, the blue strings and the tzitzis. So I went to one of their lectures and I came back having taken good notes, and I went to Rav Avram Shapiro, Zatzal, former chief rabbi of Israel, and I asked him what he says about wearing this blue dye, these blue strings on the tzitzis. And we spent about 10 minutes going back and forth. He said no. I asked him why. He said questions, I gave answers. He said questions, I gave answers. He said no, I said why. Went back and forth for about 10 minutes. And finally he said no. That's not Tcheles. There's no reason to put it on. Don't put it on. And then I said, how is the Rav sure that's not Tcheles? And by that time, about 30 students had gathered all around us. They all wanted to hear what he had to say. Mm-hmm. So he looked at me and he said, watch. And he started pulling people's tzitzis. And he couldn't see things that well. He pulled their tzitzis and said, I don't see Tcheles here. I don't see Tcheles here. He started showing me, you. He started pointing to the crowd. He said, any one of you have Tcheles? You. You don't. You see? Am Yisrael didn't accept it. It's not Tcheles. So one of the guys said, and what happens if in 100 years Am Yisrael accepts that it is Tcheles? So he looked at me and said, if Am Yisrael accepts that it's Tcheles, then you better put one on too. I hold it's not Tcheles. But the halacha and Am Yisrael is defined by Am Yisrael, not by me, nor by any other rabbi. The tradition of Am Yisrael, we believe that Hashem guides us. We don't just do things because this is what someone decided. The rabbis have a power to try and guide the people. And they're supposed to try and guide the people. But at the end of the day, our Masoreh is that Hashem is guiding the way we behave. We try to do what's right. But the definitive decision of what is and isn't right is Hashem, is Am Yisrael. And the greatest posek, he said to me, bigger than any posek you could name me, the greatest posek is Am Yisrael. So I could stand here now today and tell you it's not Tcheles. Don't put it on. But if in 100 years you see that Am Yisrael's putting on Tcheles, if you start pointing around and see that everyone around you is wearing Tcheles, you go out there and buy a pair and you wear it too. David, clear?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yes, Shmuel.